According to a recent NOAA study, Alaskan shellfish hatcheries risk becoming unsustainable by 2040 because of ocean acidification. Over the last week, we've heard how a hatchery in Oregon is dealing with changes in ocean chemistry and about groundbreaking genetic research on shellfish adaptability. But the big questions still remain. How far-reaching will the effects be, and can we mitigate them before it's too late? KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Throughout this discussion, there's been an elephant in the room, wild stocks. Do wild coastal shellfish face the same 25-year end date that Alaskan hatcheries do?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question right there is, can organisms evolve quickly enough to compensate for that change?
Gretchen Hoffman is a leading scientist in the field of genetic adaptability. She's found that certain strains of organisms do selectively favor the trait of acid tolerance from generation to generation.
You know, if you look into the literature and other systems, you can find examples where rapid evolution has occurred. So the answer for biology and living things is yes. But
the answer for specific breeds of living things is, we don't really know yet. And that's a concern for Alaskans who have relied on particular types of clams and other shellfish for many years as a food source. Jeremy Mathis is a NOAA oceanographer who worked on the study at the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery in Seward.
The measurements that we made in the hatchery does cause some alarm for those natural environments, because it's the same water that we're seeing in the hatchery that's all up and down the coast.
Jeff Hetrick is the owner of Aleutic Pride. Like many local residents, he's noticed a serious decline in shellfish populations in south-central Alaska.
Well, absolutely. I don't think that we're going to lose the wild stocks. You basically lost the wild stocks. They're really hard to come by. It's difficult for us to even get the broodstock to produce in the hatchery. You know, that's a razor clam issue, and people are aware of that on the peninsula, but especially in Lower Cook Inlet and Homer area, little neck clams, butter clams, cockles—they're hard to find. It's been a decline now for the past decade.
Hoffman says some of the urchin divers she works with on the California coast have noticed similar years with very poor harvest numbers. She says there haven't been enough studies yet to make a definite correlation with acidification, but it is something scientists and locals are thinking about.
It's a pretty big concern, you know, because some of the things that we learn about invertebrate biology is that just the simple first beginning step of fertilization is pH sensitive. So right there, if you have a species that has the sperm-egg interaction being affected by acidification, then right off the bat, no matter how many adults you have fewer progeny going forward and therefore really bad recruitment years.
So what we need to do now is take our monitoring systems that we've installed in the hatchery and expand those out into these natural sites, so that we're getting that same level of monitoring, that same level of environmental intelligence, so that that we can answer that question.
NOAA's Pacific Marine Environment Lab in Seattle and the University of Alaska Fairbanks are doing just that. Not only do they plan to expand hatchery research to another site, possibly Ketchikan, they're also partnering for a new study. Wiley Evans is heading out this week with a team of scientists to survey acidification parameters from Dixon Entrance in southern southeast all the way to Kodiak Island.
We're doing measurements both continuously as the ship's moving from surface seawater flowing through the vessel, sort of in the same way that we are making measurements at Aleutic Pride. And we're also going to be making measurements at specific places where we profile the entire water column from the surface down to the bottom.
Evans says they're hoping to get a more comprehensive picture of current ocean conditions so that they can make more educated decisions on how to deal with acidification in the future. A future that could look much worse than today, says Hoffman.
I think it's a pretty big problem if you stand back and look at it for what it is.
It is a complex problem with regional factors that exacerbate it. In places like Alaska, for example, carbon emissions speed up CO2-rich glacial melt. In places like Washington, Oregon, and California that are subject to seasonal upwelling, the newer oxygen-rich water has more CO2 to begin with now, so it can't as efficiently counteract the deeper, older CO2-rich water that comes to the surface. On top of that, scientists have estimated that the water coming up is 30 to 50 years old. Imagine that many years from now, when today's water is what lies beneath the surface.
We can't get complacent and say, well, we've done enough. It's time to move on to the next crisis. This is something that we have to keep right at the forefront and make sure that people understand that while we've learned a lot in the past few years, we've still got a long way to go in terms of understanding the long-term implications of ocean acidification.
Mathis says that is why it's crucial to do this work now, to salvage and protect what we can of the marine ecosystem for 2, 10, or 25 years down the line. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.